My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Imagine this scenario. You come from a long line of physicians. You follow the family tradition, study medicine, and practice for 20 years. But something is missing. Something does not feel right. Something does not feel good about what you're doing and the way you're doing it. You take a leave from your practice, a leap of faith, and venture out to find a different approach to healing those that you are called to work with, and ultimately heal yourself. Returning to Destination Unlimited this evening is the amazing and wonderful Sarah Bamford-Seidelman, who actually lived this story. Sarah was a fourth-generation physician living a nature-starved, hectic lifestyle until a walrus entered her life and changed everything. She's a practicing shamanic mentor and woman of medicine and leads transformational travel retreats around the world. She's the author of three popular books, The Book of Beasties, Your A to Z Guide to Illuminating Wisdom of Spirit Animals, Swimming with Elephants, and Born to Freak, a salty primer for irrepressible humans. She resides in northern Minnesota near Lake Superior with her family and two dogs. Her website is followyourfeelgood.com, and she joins me this week to discuss her just-published new book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? Daily Feel-Good Inspiration for Creatives, Healers, and Helpers. Please join me in welcoming back to Destination Unlimited, Sarah Bamford-Seidelman. Good evening, Sarah.
Good evening, Victor. Thank you so much for having me on again.
And it's so nice to have you back. You are delightful, and what you're going to share with our listeners is going to be both inspirational and a lot of fun. So let's get started. So for our listeners meeting you for the first time, because we have a lot of new listeners since you were on 2 years ago with Swimming with Elephants, please share your path and how you went from a fourth generation MD to a shamanic mentor and woman of medicine.
Yes. Well, I practiced for, as you mentioned, 20 years and really loved my work for a long time. But I, over time, grew, started feeling disconnected at work. And I decided to go explore that, what was going on with myself. And I should tell people that my specialty, my board certification was in pathology. So I was basically a professional disease hunter, is sort of how I think of it. I sat at a microscope and, you know, if you've ever had a skin biopsy or a colon biopsy or, you know, had surgery, that tissue goes to a pathologist for them to find out, you know, is there disease there or is it, you know, healthy tissue? So I just started getting less interested in looking for disease and started getting more curious about what makes people well. And it started to happen in this cancer conference I was in every week. And as they would present the different patients, I couldn't help. I remember one day they were talking about a patient who needed chemo and radiation and things like that. And this person happened to be very isolated in a rural area, had no family members who could take them, you know, transport them anywhere, no support. And I remember just thinking to myself, wow, like, I wonder if the community or this person had been, you know, surrounded by loving family, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years previously, you know, would that have that impacted their health somehow? Would, you know, would it be possible to prevent disease that way? You know, and of course, I knew, like, we're not going to be able to prove anything like that. But I just started getting curious. And on my sabbatical, I started learning about transformational coaching and some other things. But meanwhile, I had a lot of free time on my hands compared to, you know, what I'd had in the past, raising four kids and working full time. And I sort of stumbled into this old idea after spending a lot of time out in nature that the wild animals that cross your path, you know, may have messages for you. Which sounded really crazy to me at the time because I was like, well, how could that be? I mean, you know, I was very scientific, very, you know, kind of an academic mindset. And I was like, that makes no sense at all. But at the same time, Victor, I was very desperate for some kind of clue as to what I was supposed to do because I knew that summer that I didn't want to go back to work. There was something else I was supposed to be doing, but I wasn't sure what it was. And as I started to pay attention to the animals, that the wild animals in particular that were crossing my path, and, you know, just asking myself, well, what might the message of this, you know, ant crossing across the sidewalk, or this bird that's calling to me in the trees, you know, what might these beasties, as I began to call them, you know, be trying to tell me? And as I did that, it was like really astonishing. I started to get messages that, as I began to apply them, were very helpful, which kind of, you know, shattered my, maybe my, the way I thought the world was, you know, because I believed, you know, everything was based in science, and that, you know, somehow humans were above animals, that why would something below me be able to teach me something? And as I began to really connect with that and go deeper with it, I became very humbled that, you know, we're all interconnected, and we all every creature and being on this planet is, you know, we rely on each other. And if something happens to one of us, it happens to all of us. So some of those profound teachings started to come through. And yeah, so that's sort of how I began to slowly disconnect from my linear logical sort of left brain thinking into more holistic right brain and more creative, I guess, intuitive, you might call it, or spiritual way of thinking.
You know, it's funny that you talk about the animal connection. I've always loved all types of animals and have, I wouldn't call myself an animal communicator, but I seem to be able to get through to them, and they seem to be able to get through to me. And at the end of March, my former employment came to an end because of the crisis here in New York City. And I had more time to spend. We have a little urban backyard here in my house. It's a very small yard, maybe 30 feet by 50 feet. And a huge tree hanging over it with mulberries. All of a sudden, I started seeing all of these birds that I've never seen before, including cardinals and blue jays and robins, in addition to the sparrows who are always prevalent here in New York, and pigeons. And the squirrels started coming around. So I'd sit outside and I'd start communicating with them. And they said, hey, bring us some food, bring us some nuts, and bring us some seeds. And I started feeding them. So my daily ritual now is communing with the animals.
Oh, I love that. It's so amazing. Like, yeah, you don't have to go far. Like, sometimes people, when I introduce them to this work, they're like, well, I never see animals, so I don't think that could really do much for me. And I'm like, well, why'd you call me in a week after you start paying attention and tell me if that's true?
if an old dude in New York City can commune with animals and does it on a daily basis, anybody can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So your dramatic change in path took place in your early 40s. My personal life path also took a synchronistic spiritual detour in my late 30s. What advice would you offer to others who are in that age range and looking for something more?
I would invite you to make room, just clear out some space in your life. So that might be clearing out a closet. It could start there. It might be clearing out your schedule. You know, in my case, I, you know, went to 80% was one of the first steps I did. So I had one day a week that was kind of free to, and I mean, I had four kids at the time. It wasn't exactly free, but it was time away from work that I could at least, do what I was interested in. So I think creating some space so you can explore, like create some empty space so that you can allow yourself to explore what it might be, because I sure as heck didn't know I was going to be going, you know, when I planned my sabbatical, I wasn't like, I'll take a sabbatical and then I'll become a shamanic healer. I was like, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm really obsessed with animals and this is weird and maybe I'm crazy and oh gosh, you know, like maybe I'm a hot mess. And so I think creating space is probably one of the kindest things you can do for yourself.
Additionally, in the changes that I've made in my life, and there have been several, two things came into play. Number one, faith that it would work. And number two, the courage to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tell you, when I started my my journey, it was definitely a spiritual journey. And I really didn't have faith at the beginning. And I think that's what, you know, took me years to acquire some faith that there was, you know, something good was going to happen. In fact, I have a story to tell about the title of the book that I think is where my faith really, well, my faith, yeah, started to grow. Yeah, when I was on my sabbatical, I suddenly realized, oh my gosh, I don't want to go back to work. I'm loving exploring these wild animals and the messages and being in nature. And I decided that what I was going to that I wanted to do was like not go back to work, keep exploring. And I asked the universe, I made a prayer. I said, universe, if I'm not meant to go back to work, show me how. And then something extraordinary happened, which I know we're close to our timeout, so maybe I'll save it for when we return.
Go ahead. We have a minute. Go ahead.
Yeah. So 2 weeks after that request, and I was not a spiritual person at the time, my husband was notified that he was getting a raise based on productivity that was completely unexpected. And it was literally nearly to the dollar the amount of my part-time salary at the time.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And so I was like, wow, this is great news. I guess I'm not meant to go back to work. But then 2 weeks later, I was like, you know what? I don't know if that was the sign. And I began to doubt it. And that's when I realized that I was sort of imposing this glass ceiling on myself. Like, and that's when I began to ask myself this question. Sarah, how good are you willing to let it get? Mm-hmm. You know, how much love, abundance, joy would you be willing to allow in? I mean, the universe is offering it to you. Are you willing to take it? So that's why I titled the book that, because I think it's a wonderful question to ask ourselves periodically, because we can be our own worst, or at least I, for sure, can be my own worst enemy.
And that's something we'll address later on in the show, where people have opportunities, but because of some sense of lack of self-worth or self-love, they just don't proceed on them.
Yes.
And we'll touch upon that later in the show. My guest, Sarah Bamford-Seidelman, she's the author of the new book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? Daily Feel-Good Inspiration for Creatives, Healers, and Helpers. We'll be back with more of Sarah after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human. And she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Sarah Bamford-Seidelman. She's the author of the new book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? Sarah, the last time that you were on with me a couple of years back, you were talking about your book, Swimming with Elephants. Please share with our listeners what inspired you to write it and what you wanted readers to take away from it.
Yes, well, that's sort of the whole book is my story of leaving medicine to pursue this, you know, to sort of say yes to my hero's journey and to pursue this question, you know, what makes people well? And, you know, my story is like the hero's journey, which can be a terrifying and very challenging experience. And I wanted people to read my story and realize that, you know, to hear their own call to the hero's journey and be able to say yes to it after realizing that, yes, it's difficult, but like so many amazing and magical things happen if you say yes. That was my main motivation. And also just to open the minds of anybody who is like me, who is wondering, yeah, is this all there is to the world, or is there something else there? Because I certainly wondered about spirit, about God, but I really didn't, really hadn't had any direct experiences with it. And that's what happened to me in my midlife crisis. Absolutely. I connected with that, and it's absolutely changed my life.
And when you ask that question, if you're open enough to ask that question, the answers start to come, don't they?
They do. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, your just published book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get, was written with a little assistance from one of your spirit animals, Alice the Elephant. Please introduce us to Alice and share the story of how you met.
Yes. Well, just as it was about time for me to go back to my job in medicine, I started getting the courage, maybe I don't need to fully go back. And right around that time when I really could use some extra courage, Alice appeared in my shamanic journeys. And for those of you who don't know what a shamanic journey is, that's just when you listen to a particular sort of drum beat and it alters your consciousness. And that's how people go and to visit the spirit worlds, to receive this loving and compassionate, wisdom. And Alice encouraged me, and she told me, that where I was going, I wasn't going to need my medical diplomas. And she sort of rolled them all up and threw them in the river, which at the time I was like, wow, that seems a little extreme. I wasn't quite ready to do that. But what she was kind of trying to demonstrate was that I wasn't going to need all this stuff where I was headed. And she really encouraged me to be myself, be authentic, and not be afraid of what everybody's thinking about me. Because also at the time, I had started to write a book and share some personal stories. And it was, as anybody who knows who's attempted to do something creative, it can be terrifying, and it's a very vulnerable feeling to think, okay, do I really want to share these stories with other people? Will they think I'm okay? Will I look bad? All that kind of stuff. And she's this, she has a lot of the quality, she's a spirit elephant, but she has all these beautiful qualities that I think many of us are familiar with elephants, just very loving and connected and affectionate. And she has a whole herd of elephants in the spirit realms that she's introduced to me too. And she's got a wonderful sense of humor. And so when I asked her last summer, I wanted to start a little project with her where, she would share a message every day. And I decided to do it for 100 days in a row. And I asked her what she thought of that. And she was really excited. So that's how it started, as I just shared a message every day from Alice. I just, said, what do you want the people to know? And then she would share her wisdom. And I created a little bit of artwork to go with each pick, with each, message that she shared. And people really enjoyed the messages so much that one weekend I went away to give a retreat, and somebody contacted me on Saturday and said, well, where's Alice's message? And I'm like, oh, I'm on retreat. And she's like, well, I need it. Like, can it be done by noon? And I'm like, oh my goodness, like, people need these Alice messages. This is no joke. So, when the 100 days wrapped up, I decided that I wanted to make it into a book. And I'm a real proponent of having like a morning meditation or prayer practice. I just found that that has really just changed my life. And so I love these kind of books where you have like a prayer, a little page for each day of the year. And so that's what we did. So Alice has her message, and then I share a little story or a reflection from myself. And then we have a couple questions to sort of help you self-reflect as you're reading it. And then there's a prayer at the end.
And it's wonderfully written, wonderfully formatted, and just so delightful on a daily basis to look at each of these pages. Now, I just want to share something with our listeners. This was a woman who was a scientist, an MD, a pathologist. She has a spirit animal, and more than one spirit animal. And if any of you with left brain mentality out there, you know who I am, you know what I do. I'm very left brain when it comes to the business world. But I have a spirit animal too, and she has a spirit animal. We have spirit animals. Get yourself a spirit animal. Find out. Yes. Ask. Go on a quest. You'll get one.
For sure.
That's all I want to say about that. Now, in reading some of Alice's contribution to the book, it is apparent that she may have been a sailor at some time, because she speaks in rather salty language. Have you discussed this with her?
Well, the thing is, when she came along, I had this book that I was working on. And in fact, Victor, there were quite a few swear words in this book. And I was very nervous about this upsetting my mother or, a lot of people, because I wasn't sure if it was polite, all this kind of thing. And I went to visit Alice to ask her what to do about this. And she was just like, Sarah, if the words need to be in there, then just keep them in there. You know, she just strongly encouraged me that salt was is a necessary ingredient to life. So, you know, and that was part of letting myself be myself, you know, some people, it's very offensive to swear. And for me, it's just one of the, sometimes swearing feels like the most spiritual moment in a day. Like, you know, it can be out of joy or exuberance, you know? And so anyway, yes, she's salty.
She's salty. And did she say anything about where her saltiness came from, just out of curiosity?
You know, I should ask her about that. I mean, she hasn't told me about any oceanic voyaging and, you know, with, but she's got it. She's got a lawlessness for sure in her.
She's an outlaw. Alice the Outlaw.
She is. She has a line in here. Never stop chasing after love, even if the popo are on your tail. We mean no disrespect, you know, to the police, especially now when they're under fire.
Absolutely.
But,
yes. Absolutely.
Love is ships all, trumps all.
Absolutely. What audience do you and Alice write this book for?
You know, this book is for, I talk about it being for the creatives, the helpers, the healers. You know, I feel like there's this population of us who are longing to help and want to improve the world and be of service. And it can be really easy for, and I count myself in that group, you know, and it can be easy for us to get overwhelmed by the business at hand, the work at hand, because boy, when I was writing this book, I had no idea what 2020 was going to bring. So I feel like it's really important right now. And there's so much work to be done. And so I think the book is there here to encourage us, to goad us a little bit. She's also, Alice is a lot like, you know, hey, this is serious and let's go here. You know, you've got these capabilities. Let's use them, you know, but also about gentleness and kindness with ourselves. And she does a lot of encouraging us to really sit in stillness, which I think is one of the things that really empowers us as helpers, healers, creatives, artists, writers, dancers, playwrights, you know, all these amazing roles. And she's just, yeah, she really wants to encourage that particular group of people. And I'm really excited to help them too, because I think they're the visionaries who can help us cross this bridge, go through this portal that we're all in right now, and help to create that world that we all want to live in, that we want to leave behind for our grandchildren and our grandchildren's children.
We know the myth of the wounded healer and the wounded helper, but are creatives and artists and dancers and those who bring that beauty into the world, are they also wounded in some way?
Well, I think we're all wounded for sure. And I think, well, one of the things, you know, I talked at the beginning about how I wanted to know what creates health. You know, I knew like disease backwards and forwards. But what I've realized is that to create health in ourselves, part of that is self-expression. So, and I see the creative impulse being something that we all need to use. Like, and that's what brings life to us. So whether it's dancing, gardening, writing, you know, braiding your granddaughter's hair, cooking something out of the two ingredients you find in your fridge, you know, it's just, we are born to create, you know, we are creative. So, and I think that using that skill every day is something that really can help us to become more vital, you know. And of course, dancing, moving our bodies, I think is also fabulous for that as well. In shamanic cultures, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on storytelling, dancing, singing, creating things, crafting, expressing yourself in art. And I think those are things that are somewhat missing from our culture, or they're not revered the way they, I think, need to be.
Absolutely. You mentioned the formatting of the book, the way that each day, each page is laid out, the days are laid out, and with an opening comment from Alice, your commentary on it, and then some suggestions and a prayer. This is something that someone could pick up and literally open to any page on any day and find useful and encouraraging information on.
Yeah. And do you want, should we open to a random page right now?
Yeah, why don't you open a random page and share it? Sure, absolutely.
Okay, set attention. Whoever's reading this will be a good one. Okay, so I'm going to share a page, and it turns out to be September 15th, and the theme is Cease Pleasing. And here's Alice's message. Realize that not all people can handle your awesomeness in every moment. That's okay. Toss them a loving namaste and move on. In peace, love, and joy, take your effervescence elsewhere. And then from me, from Sarah, I used to take offense when my comedic musings or my highly enthusiastic nature were not appreciated, or when I got baffled looks in response to my delightful conversation starters in the doctor's dining room at the hospital. I shrunk three sizes. For example, did you see American Beauty at the theater? I can so relate to the wife character. Which character did you relate to? With Alice's aid, I've gotten better at accepting that I am not for everyone. As my sister, comedian Maria Bamford, says, if you enjoy caustic, barrel-chested Polynesian one-liners, my show may not be for you. It's okay to walk out. And then the questions, the kind of the self-reflection questions are, can you accept that you cannot please everyone all the time? Who's the hardest person for you to accept this about? Dear God, help me detach quickly and lovingly from those who don't get me yet.
Her name is Sarah Bamford Seidelman. She's the author of the new book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? Sarah, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your wonderful work.
You can find everything at followyourfeelgood.com. Followyourfeelgood.com. And there, if you are interested or curious about meeting your own spirit animal, which Victor and I highly recommend, you can subscribe and I'll send you access to a guided meditation where you can go seeking one.
And we'll be back with more of Sarah after these words on the Olden Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
During these times of worry, fear, and uncertainty, a calming and soothing voice may help you relax, clear your mind, and help you sleep. This is Victor the Voice Furman, and for the first time, I'm offering my voice for your well-being. I will craft a personal guided meditation to suit your needs. My fees are very reasonable, and I can provide your personalized guided meditation quickly. For more information, please send an email to voice@victorthevoice.com. That's voice@victorthevoice.com. Blessings, my friend.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book. Take a walk. Unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September. Paint a self-portrait. Catch up on a TV series. Do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Look out, world. We're getting strong. The future's here and we belong. And make the world a better place. Oh,
she can stem, so can you.
Find a cure,
invent something new.
There's no challenge in the world that she can't face. She can stem.
Learn more at She Can Stem. A message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Sarah Bamford Seidelman. She's the author of the new book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? Sarah, there seems to be a shortage of self-love in supply these days, including among healers and cultural creatives. Why do you think it's easier for so many to share love and compassion with others than to accept it for themselves?
Well, I think part of that is a cultural sort of teaching that especially girls and women get, but I think men too, boys and men as well, that somehow it is better to be, you know, taking care of others or to be the nurturer than to be the one who's the receiver or the recipient. So I think that's part of it. But I think what we're all beginning to collectively learn is that until we absolutely have, you know, love and compassion for ourselves, we can't really fully do good work out there in the world without that. You know, we can work, but I mean, it's not going to be that that depth that we want to give of ourselves until we can, yeah, allow ourselves to have that. And as you mentioned, you know, many of us don't feel, you know, on some level don't feel worthy or somehow feel that maybe it would be wrong. I know when I was, you know, on my sabbatical, I wondered, you know, I've got such a wonderful life. My kids are healthy. I've got a house over my, you know, a beautiful home and a wonderful loving family. Like, maybe it's too much to ask for also work that I love, you know? So sometimes we've, you know, it's sort of like this, yeah, this glass ceiling that we sort of naturally put over ourselves.
Do you have any advice or a mantra or prayer that would apply to people to recognize that love for themselves?
Well, I think, you know, journaling that question, you know, about that question of how much, you know, maybe how much would I be willing to love myself might be good. I like to do a funny practice where if there's something I'm judging myself about, like let's say I walk into my kitchen and it's absolute disaster and there's stuff everywhere because I've been cooking, you know, and I know there's a neater way to cook, but of course I don't cook like that. I want to be shaming myself, but instead, you know, that's the natural inclination, like, oh, you should be neater or something like that. But instead, what I do is I say out loud, I love that about me. I am a messy cook, you know, and it's okay. And so to celebrate our the things that we're ashamed of, you know, like, oh, I love that I, you know, sometimes blurt out things that aren't funny, you know, or I love that, you know, sometimes I, you know, whatever it is that you naturally kind of judge yourself for, to kind of call it out and celebrate it, you know, which might sound funny, but it's just sort of bringing that out. You know, many of us have just learned or heard from other adults when we were growing up that like, yeah, like having a messy desk is, you know, unacceptable or whatever it is in your world, and just celebrating that about yourself. It's okay.
That's who I am. It's okay. I love myself and I'm just fine just the way I am.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Now, how would you apply your wisdom and experience to what is happening in our world right now? First, the pandemic. What may we learn and how may we approach the future differently?
Yeah. Well, it sure is a sobering call to, you know, to really go inside ourselves and to sit with ourselves, you know, I think. And I also like to think of it as, you know, anything extremely difficult, I always like to frame it up as an initiation. Like we're all being initiated, you know, and not just one of us, but it's just like a global initiation, which is pretty unusual. And now we've been given this second, and it's almost like a string of initiations, you know, and now what's happened with the death of the killing of George Floyd, you know, I think we're being asked to just really revisit, wow, things maybe aren't the way we thought they were. And there's a lot of injustice that needs to be righted. And so I think, yeah, we're in this time. So it's a good time to take time to sit with yourself, to do your healing work, to, you know, read good books, nourish yourself with good, healthy food, spend time in nature. Anything you can do to keep your vibration as high as possible will help you with your health and your well-being. And then, of course, all the things that bring vitality, bring us life, singing, dancing, telling stories, making art, being creative any way. I think those things are good, good ways to help keep us vital and stave off, you know, any sort of sickness, if you will. And it's, you know, life is a great mystery, and we are all certainly being plunged into it right now.
Absolutely. And a lot of the things that are happening, the economic uncertainty, the horrible, egregious acts of personal and institutional racism, opening up new conversations on all levels, generate fear. How do we alleviate? You talk a lot about fear in this book. How do we alleviate fear? What kind of things can we do?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing is fear is never going away. It is here to stay. I mean, there will always be something that we are afraid of. You know, maybe right now there's even more, but I think what we have to do is sort of feel the fear and do things anyway. So befriending it, you know, I love what Thich Nhat Hanh says. You know, he says, "Hello, fear. I know you, my old friend. You know, you've been here." and to maybe look back in your own life and realize there's been fear there all along, but you've accomplished things anyway. You've, you know, leaned into relationships anyway. You have forgiven people anyway. You have tried hard things and done them anyway. And I think now, there's just, we can't let fear stop us from attempting to right the wrongs and to connect with ourselves and to connect with each other with, despite all the challenges we have. So I think fear, we got to make friends with it. Don't let it drive the bus. You know, Liz Gilbert talks about, you know, fear's fine, you know, but like, let it sit in the back of the bus. You can drive, you know, establish that you, your highest self, is driving the bus, and you can acknowledge fear because it's always there. It's always there.
Something that I personally observed is that nothing in my imagination can ever match what happens on the other side of a situation. No, nothing that I can preconceive in terms of fear, in terms of uncertainty, in terms of self-doubt, ever matches what happens on the other side of the event.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Yes. And sometimes so much wonderful stuff is, you know, that we can't even conceptualize is going to happen. Yes. And I think our imagination can be used, of course, against us, or can be used for us. So if you're going to use, you know, in the book, Alice talks a lot about, you know, if you're going to be using your imagination to imagine horrible things, which many of us are very good at it, I call it my horribleizer, imagining, you know, horrible outcomes, then you better be darn sure you're going to spend an equal amount of time imagining amazing and beautiful things happening. It's only fair.
So Alice would say that if you're spending a lot of time watching cable news, you should also spend a lot of time watching art and music and drama and beautiful things.
Yeah, laying on the lawn and watching the clouds go by and imagining a beautiful world where, clean water runs everywhere and everybody has what they need and we all are living in harmony.
Absolutely. With everything happening in the world right now, there's an extraordinary amount of grief also. You and Alice share that we should honor grief. In what way?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if we don't honor our grief, what happens is it goes inside our body and it stays there and it can really wreak havoc. And then the other thing about grief is if we don't grieve before we die, we leave that grief with our children, our grandchildren. They then bear the burden of our grief and have to feel those feelings. And so it's so important to allow space for grief. And in our culture, you know, we're often in a hurry to move on, to, you know, be busy, to fill our time. And we don't have a lot of grief rituals. Like many beautiful cultures have some wonderful grief rituals. I was thinking of, there's a Guatemalan shaman, Martin Prechtel, who talks about in this small village where he lived in Guatemala, they had professional grievers who would come in. So when somebody died, these two professional grievers would arrive on the scene and begin to weep and really, I mean, cry and moan and sob. And what that did was it helped people to get going. It helped people to release their grief so they could feel comfortable to feel their feelings and just to bring it out, like to let it out so that it, all that pain doesn't get stuck in our bodies.
How did he manifest that?
How did he? I don't know. Like, I think we maybe need to train professional grievers in the U.S. I think that would be something really, really good. But one way we can just encourage each other to feel our feelings and not to hurry anything about grief. Grief is a process, and depending on the vastness of the loss, you know, it's just evidence that we loved someone or something when we lose something, you know. And so it's a beautiful thing to have grief. It's something to definitely honor and. Yeah.
You mentioned professional grievers. I'm remembering a movie. I can't remember the movie, what the name of the movie, the title was. But in this movie, every time somebody in this town passed away, there were this group of women who always came to the church wearing black veils and crying and praying for whether or not they knew the person or not. That almost sounds like what you're talking about.
That sounds very much like it. Yes. Yeah. And it's a tradition of, like, you know, it's like, and there are spiritual traditions where, you know, there is a period of grieving and mourning. And of course there has, I guess there has to be a period of end, you know, we don't want that to go on forever. But at the same time, I think the pendulum has swung so far the other way. I mean, people are right back to work, you know, they lose their partner. Within 2 weeks, they're, you know, back in the full-time grind, flying all over the country, doing their, you know, whatever it is their job is. And it's like, where, you know, where did the grief go? You know, it gets packed away and waiting for you to unpack it. And sometimes then it comes at the most, you know, awkward times because those feelings have to be processed and felt.
And as someone who has been a minister and someone who has worked with people processing grief, I know that there is no right or wrong with grief. We each grieve in our own way. Some people laugh hysterically. Some people cry hysterically. Some people make themselves busy. Some people cook food for other people. There's many different ways and manifestations, but the proper way to grieve is whatever works for you.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah. I remember being with a friend who had lost her husband, and it's like, there was a moment where she's like, I feel really happy right now, but it's only been 3 days and that seems wrong. Like I shouldn't, you know? And we were all like, no, like it's okay. Like it's okay to be joyful also. Like they'll be both, you know?
Absolutely. My guest is Sarah Vanpert-Seidelman. She's the author of the new book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? We'll be back with more of Sarah after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
The student asks the teacher, how do I experience transformation? The teacher replies, when the student is ready to receive deeper answers, the student then asks, how do I know what deeper questions to ask? And the teacher replies, when the student decides to commit to a practice inviting transformation, level 2 questions will be revealed. Hi, I'm Tomas Garza. And as a teacher and host, I'm inviting listeners to enroll in the Mastery of Transformation by joining me on Decide to Transform, your bridge to Level 2 Answers, Tuesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, on OM Times Radio.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Talk to your doctor about creating a plan that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
On Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Sarah Vanpert-Seidelman. We're talking about her new book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? Daily Feel-Good Inspiration for Creatives, Healers, and Helpers. One of the themes in How Good Will You Let It Get is humility. Do we as individuals and as a nation need to be a little more humble?
Yes, I think so. I think that there's so many things teaching us this, right? And I'm seeing that theme pop up a lot in social media that we need to humble ourselves. I think, this concept of studying anti-racism and how it's wonderful to see so many white people reading about, you know, white fragility and trying to understand what is white supremacy and how have I benefited from being white my entire life, you know, and that takes some humbleness to, you know, maybe you were feeling pretty good about yourself and were feeling, look, well, I'm not racist. But then when you start to learn, if you listen, and I think humbleness is also listening, which is something we're very much having to do right now, is to be quiet and listen to others' voices and educate ourselves. So, yes, I think humbleness, and I think what's happening on the earth right now is causing us to be humbled. You know, what have we done that the sea levels are rising and all these things that are happening with global warming, and that we aren't the greatest power in the world. There's certain things we can't fix instantly, you know, and that we have to reckon our behavior, you know, what's caused these things to happen.
Your response brings to mind a couple of themes. Number one, I think that as an American society, not everyone, because not everyone has been in the middle class and had, you know, fairly decent lives, but we take for granted the lives that we have in this country. There are so many people around the world who had an income equivalent to maybe one day's income of someone here, and short food supplies and horrible housing and horrible health conditions. And I think we take that for granted.
Yeah, for sure. I know I heard in India when, you know, COVID hit, that many of the street workers who rely on, you know, crowds of people always eating, you know, buying their foods and things like that, you know, there was a mass exodus out of Delhi, and, you know, people just left on foot to travel for weeks to go to their home villages, hoping to, you know, find food and support there, you know. And I don't think we can even conceptualize what that would be like to migrate on foot with your family and your children with nothing, you know?
Absolutely. So many people around the world don't even have the bare daily necessities, and survival is literally a day by day, maybe an hour by hour occurrence. So that's one thing that we have to recognize. And the other aspect you talked about is listening, really, really listening. Someone said, two ears, one mouth, listen twice, speak once. That really is an art we need to learn in this world, isn't it?
Absolutely. And yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I've learned on the shamanic path is that, you know, the one most powerful medicine we have is ourselves. And when we are fully present and fully listening, whether it's sitting in nature and just listening to what's happening around us, or whether it's sitting with the person who is grieving and just listening without any kind of judgment or any kind of input or any kind of fixing, just listening. It is the most powerful medicine.
Yeah, it's a true gift when you actually listen to someone without having the feeling the necessity to respond. It's truly a gift.
Yes.
In Born to Freak, you feature a quote from Alice that says, "Commit to believing you deserve to experience all the love and connection your heart desires. No earning or repenting or serving time is required. An elephant never forgets this." How may we as humans remember this?
Well, one of the ways that I remember that is just when I step outside every day onto my, you know, front porch and I, you know, smell the air, especially right now when all the lilacs are blooming, and see that sun peeking behind the trees, and just allowing all the beauty of nature that is just constantly vibrating this amazing acceptance and celebration of what it is, you know. And that's one of the reminders that I, you know, I just take that in, and I remind myself that I am part of this earth, you know. I just like the beautiful lilacs or the you know, some animal you admire, like the great blue whale or something magnificent like that. We are that too, you know, and so we too deserve to receive all the love and abundance and nourishing everything that we need, you know, and so does everybody else. And, you know, how can we find a way to allow that in and help other people to get it, you know, when we're in a position to help somebody else?
You have a funny line in your book. Which comes first, house cleaning or creativity?
Oh, well, Victor, I think it's definitely creativity is my number one goal. Yeah, I love, I think Mary Oliver made this, she has a wonderful line where she says, you know, we ran out of mustard and, you know, things are a little messy around here, but I was busy getting, you know, getting my finger, like being brushed by angels' wings. Mm. And I couldn't take care of those things because I had to attend to the most important thing.
Absolutely. So in your book, creativity is number one. House cleaning, later.
Yeah. A messy house is a sign of a life well lived.
Absolutely. I agree with you. One of the December entries in your book is You Are Qualified. Alice says, you are the manifestation of God consciousness, and as such, you're eminently qualified to be a conduit of wisdom and healing. The only requirement is to continually seek peace. What is the key to seeking peace?
I think it's a practice. You know, it's something we have to practice and practice and practice. So meditation is a wonderful way. Going walking is a wonderful way. And again, expressing yourself creatively, painting, drawing, you know, whatever floats your boat, whatever gets you into flow, I think is a way to really cultivate that peace. And the more we learn to cultivate it and what it is and where, you know, how to connect with it, we can start to then bring that to other people. We can show up at a place where there is chaos and we can bring that peace. And they've, you know, they've shown that scientifically that the calmest person in the room, the other brains will entrain to that brain. So if there is, you know, again, chaos, suffering, a lot of upsetness, whatever's going on, if you have been cultivating your peace, you will be like a wonderful little, wonderful giant, I don't know, oak tree that enters the room and just brings that. We've all stood beneath magnificent trees and we know what that feels like. And I think that's what Alice is talking about.
Absolutely. You and I both are meditating, practicing meditators. And what do you say to somebody who says, you know, I don't have time to meditate or I can't meditate?
Well, you know, what I say is like when I started trying to meditate, I really had a hard time with it also. And that's where I think I found shamanic journeying. So I might tell them about shamanic journeying because that's a beautiful way to go into a very deep meditation, but it's also rather adventurous and very, can be, it's not quite the same as sitting still and, doing a straight up meditation. So I think it's a nice way to begin a stillness practice. So that's one thing I might share them. But then I also might say, like, we can't afford not to, you know, we have to make that time. And if you do it for a while, you'll notice, like, your whole life gets better. Your days go better. It pays so many dividends. And, I mean, they've shown scientifically now, too, it makes you younger. It reverses, you know, it alters the telomeres in your chromosomes. It's an anti-aging thing. So don't put on that night cream. Instead, just, you know, get up 15 minutes earlier and sit in stillness.
And an immunity booster.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Absolutely. I think the greatest lesson any of us may learn is that we are truly never alone, that the divine, as we understand the divine, is always with us. Is this a concept that everyone can get?
Well, I wouldn't say everyone, because I think there's a lot of people who are agnostic or who are atheist. And, you know, what I've learned is, because I used to be agnostic, and what I've learned about atheist people is that they want somewhat the same things that those who believe in, you know, in a higher power or in God want. You know, they want to have their lives matter. They want to take good care of other people that they love, that kind of thing. But ultimately, I think that, you know, we all long to live meaningful lives and to contribute and to experience love and connection. And so I think that we're, you know, we're just more alike than we are different, whether we call ourselves atheist or whether we believe in, you know, God or a higher power.
Absolutely. What would you like readers to take away from How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get?
I just want them to feel encouraged and empowered that they are the medicine. You know, the more they can embrace who they are and how they want to express themselves, and the more they can cultivate their own sense of inner peace and strength, that, you know, the better the world will be. And so I think that's the main gist of it.
Absolutely. Cultivate that within yourself, find peace within yourself, find love within yourself, and then it comes to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful message. So what do you do on Tuesdays?
What do I do on Tuesdays?
You know, this is everything you've done just now. This has been on a Monday. So what are you doing? No, that's an old joke. So what's next? What's next for Sarah Bamford Seidelman?
What's next? This is a very good question. Everything's so up in the air. I have a lot of things planned for the fall that involve some travel and gatherings in public. And so none of those have been canceled yet, but we shall see. I am working on a book of shamanic stories with someone. So working on a book proposal for that. So I'm really excited about that, to tell some wonderful stories. And just to continue serving my clients and hopefully next year we're going to Peru. That is a plan for 2021. So for anybody who's interested in, yes, plant medicine, I will be taking a group to Peru for that. So it should be amazing.
Her name is Sarah Bamford Seidelman. Her book, How Good Are You Willing to Let It Get? Sarah, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about you and your amazing work.
Follow Your Feel Good is my website. And again, you can, if you subscribe, you'll get access to a guided meditation to help you connect with a spirit animal, which I think, and Alice thinks, is a very good idea.
And you can get her book on Amazon and wherever great and wonderful books are sold. Thank you so much for joining us, Sarah.
Thank you, Victor. It was a joy to be here.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.